This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're still tuned into the show that explores the narratives of iconic landmarks and places in the Klang Valley. Is heritage too focused on British colonial buildings? We'll be answering this question today. So a friend of mine recently made a cursory observation that perhaps the local heritage scene and appreciation might be too focused on British colonial buildings and not so much on rural architecture and heritage. To a certain extent, we can see where he's coming from with that observation. We focus on a lot of monumental buildings here in KL that are remnants of our colonial past, which is fine because these buildings are part of our history, narrative, and heritage. But just to entertain his notion and sort of challenge ourselves, I've decided to pose this question to our resident heritage conservation expert, Elizabeth Cardosa, just to get her take on it. She breaks it down for us.
Well, we can't get away from this particular legacy, whether we like it or not, right? And I think you are talking more about within the British colonial period. So, sort of depending if we look at, you know, let's say the late 18th century, you know, if we're looking at Georgetown and the setting up of the British settlement, into the 1800s, the 19th century, and squarely into until the mid-20th century, if you look at, I mean, where do we end this colonial period? 1957, 1948, 1957 independence, right? 1948, setting up Federation, right? The, you know, 1941, the Japanese occupation. So 1941 to 45. Then sort of the coming back of the British military administration and then the Federation. So where do we end it? Okay. And I think that some people kind of tend to, technically we can end it 1957, independence. If that's kind of, so if we're talking about a period of, let's say, two 1.5 centuries or a bit more under 2 centuries, right? What has survived since then? And KL, if we're talking about KL in the Klang Valley, really KL, right? Let's talk about KL. The manifestation of what most people see as British colonial buildings will be seen in the form of the civic buildings in the civic heart, where the monumental building of the Sultan Abdul Samad building is seen as sort of the glory, right, or the highest glory. And that's 1895, okay? 1897 by the time it was opened. So, what, 130 years ago, more or less? Not so long, right? So if we look at KL and we look at that, the idea of what I think most people will think about when they think about British colonial buildings will be institutional buildings. You know, building court la, government offices la, you know, things like that. That's what I think most people will think about. When they start talking about heritage, you know me, I have this whole view on what is heritage, whose heritage, where does it start, where does it end? Is it personal to you only? You know, how small or how world is it, right? You know, on what scale are we looking at it? I might see something as really precious, but it might be a very small. I live in PJ late 1950s, early 1960s house, single story, bungalow. And it looks from the outside like when it was first built. No changes. And actually, when you go in, you will also see the floor is not changed. The space configurations are generally not changed. The material is not changed. So not colonial, but of a period and of a time where if you look at that building, it reflects the availability of materials. What people would have considered to be necessary? What kind of function were you using it for? So if you go back into time and you think about when KL was first started, this notion of colonial, certainly the colonial power, the British administration wanted to make a mark. So if you use a building style or a form which is not monumental, maybe people are not going to take so much interest in you, or you are not reflecting a sense of authority or power, which is what most of these monumental buildings are doing. You know, so you make a statement, I am here, look at me, I'm grand, I'm big, I'm beautiful. Or at least the nature of my building, you must see as beautiful. Because it might have been really strange to a lot of people, this style, what has been called by architectural historians and other movements as the British Raj style. That's how it's described. The British colonial style, the British Raj style, which if you talk about the British Raj, then it sort of is a borrowing from British India. And of course, the British had colonized India before they turned up here. And the style of building that they adopted and adapted was from Mughal style architecture, which goes back to, you know, an earlier period in Indian history. So it is, which has in some cases, people refer back to architectural historians will harken back to the Moorish period. So you have a Moorish style architecture, which is then borrowed and turned into a Mughal style architecture, which is then borrowed and turned into a British Raj style architecture, which is what we see now as colonial, right? But I always have a but. I'm so sorry. So the but is actually there were a lot of other non-institutional buildings built during the colonial time. A lot of the shophouse architecture in old KL was built during the colonial period. So what we see as the area from Jalan Tuanku Abdul Rahman until Brickfields, and certainly the shophouses in the commercial area of KL was built during the British colonial period. Of course, there have been modern interventions. Old buildings have gone, they have been replaced, etc. But if you look at the two or three-story shophouse, they were built during the colonial period. I would hazard a guess to say that your friend probably would not place those as colonial buildings. I may be wrong, you know, but they were certainly built during the colonial period, the British colonial period. So often I think when I talk to people and they say colonial buildings, they are talking about the railway station, you know, the Sultan Sabah building, the buildings around the Padang, other buildings, like maybe certain schools, which were built in a style which was not Malay or Asian, right? And so we tend to refer to those as colonial buildings, lah. But then you then get into, like I said, you have the shophouses. You also have, in that period, because there were things like hospitals being built, okay? And slum houses, like, you know, and quarters for officers, for civil service officers, depending on your class. So if you look at number 2 Jalan Stoner, which is where Badan Warisan has its headquarters, yeah, its operations are from there. It is a 1926 colonial officer's house, right? And if you look at it, and people will say, yes, it's a colonial building. All right. But then it's for the civil servant. All right. You go to an area like Brickfields where the 100 quarters, the now past 100 quarters, which is now a huge new development, were 100 houses, terrace houses, two-story terrace houses, which were also for civil servants, okay? But they were of a lower grade, a lower class with it in terms of hierarchy, okay? I think most people would not look at those and say British colonial or colonial architecture. They would think normal lah, you know? And so I think that the scale of when we start looking at colonial, this notion of a little bit more monumental, a little bit more embellished, let's say, you know, comes into mind. So that becomes the picture lah, of what it is. So while I, to some extent, understand the idea of this, we glorify a certain type of architecture. What happened to our local architecture? Even if we glorify a certain type of, even if one is inclined to glorify the Sultan Abdul Samad building, if you think about it, the open verandas, the corridors, the white spaces, that you would never have found that in a British building, in the motherland, so to speak, for the simple reason that the weather would not have permitted it, right?
Yeah.
And the reason why it's been adapted to our climate is because of our climate. So, yes, British colonial period, but not British. Okay? And I think that we should sort of think about it more in those terms, because there has been an adaptation. If people say, oh, you know, Summit Building, you have the monumentality of it. You have the grand forms, you have the roof, you have the scale of it, yeah? You have the material, the brick, open brickwork, you know, looking very different from anything else that was there ever at that time. But it has open corridors, it has wide spaces, it was built in response, it wasn't closed, it was built in response to the conditions around. Tanglin Hospital, it has been since rebuilt, but in the style of the original old Tanglin Hospital, which was the local hospital, is a timber, raised timber building. That's what kind of Badan Warisan's house is, you know, the number 2 Jalan Stone is. It's raised off the ground, allows ventilation, circulation. It's a masonry structure, brick and plaster structure. Wooden floors, generally speaking, not all, but most of it. You know, with a pitch roof. Now, why do we have a pitch roof? Because rain, okay? And we need to have rain fall off the roof, come out so it could follow. The eaves are quite deep because you will want to have the rain fall off, and you need to have a little bit of a covered space. So the overhang of the eave is quite deep. Originally, you would have had smaller drains following the roof of the building. And because when the drain fell off, it would then drop into the drain and get drained away. Okay? No gutters were necessary because you had this but it was a way of dispersing rainwater fall off and going into something like that. And you take the Rua Penghulu Abu Saman, which is built during the colonial period, but in timber, and it's definitely local Malay vernacular timber architecture, except that the roof tiles were different from because it's clay, terracotta tiles are different from what you would have seen typically in a kampung. Okay? So it elevated the status. So it wasn't just atap, it was something different, and therefore it sets you apart. It has, more carvings. So again, very beautiful. It's a very beautiful building. Very tall, very, very grand for what it was. And the scale of it next to number 2 Jalan Stona is, reasonably, although it's much smaller than number two house, it actually is, to some people, much more attractive because it is embellished. It has all the carvings. It actually has a sense of local space, that kind of thing. Whereas number 2 Jalan Stona is a more modest and less embellished colonial offices. What is? Same time in KL, you have more or less, this is the 1920s, okay? But just before that, you have, again, what people will call, probably refer to as a colonial bungalow, a house like what is now referred to as Rumah Tangsi on Jalan Tangsi, used to be built in the early 1900s. By a Chinese tycoon, in the style of having certain affectations which are, colonial, right? Embellished with decorations and items inside, which are a mixture, quite eclectic, of Chinese style with Western style architecture. More Western-style architectural elements, no doubt. But if you look, for example, at the way the staircase is, you look at there, there's an airwell in the middle of the building. You'd never have an airwell in a British house. It just wouldn't work because here we need it, light, air, rain, And for obviously feng shui purposes and things like that, that it had a function, which was quite Asian, but we look at it and we say, oh, it's a British colonial building. So I think that while I understand where a lot of people come from when they talk about it this way, we really should maybe start understanding our architecture and our inherited architecture as shared heritage, sharing the tie, sharing history, sharing the technology that's available, sharing people's ego and aspirations, and if we can start to kind of look at it that way, then maybe we can get away from bias or this is good, this is bad, and just appreciate it for what it is. That's my take on it.
That was our resident heritage conservation expert, Elizabeth Cardosa, sharing her thoughts on the question of whether our local heritage focuses mostly on British colonial architecture. We're going for a short break. Stay tuned. I'm Hanif Baharudin, and you're listening to I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin. Heritage conservation expert Elizabeth Cardosa joins me on the show today for our monthly conversation, and this time around, we've decided to interrogate a question that was posed to me by my friend. Does heritage emphasize a lot on British colonial buildings while neglecting rural architecture? Elizabeth has given a thorough answer earlier on the show. Here's a follow-up on that. But okay, so looking at it from that perspective, what about, I guess, to a certain extent, a lack of attention or maybe care that's placed for quote unquote rural architecture, for lack of a better term, I suppose. And I think the again, from our perspective, we've been doing this for quite a while. We kind of know the need to appreciate heritage from all points of view, right? I suppose. But I think for the lay people out there who might have the tendency to romanticize the, I guess, what is deemed as the, you know, British colonial architecture as quote unquote our heritage, that needs to be appreciated. But I guess to a certain extent, put aside or have a lack of care for the so-called rural architecture, I suppose. How should we go about, I guess, dealing with that, I suppose? Because I think that's also one point of argument that has been raised when it comes to, I guess, in making this observation, I suppose, from my friend's perspective. Because the argument is that, oh, we romanticize all these British colonial buildings, but we don't really care so much about our rumah kayu, quote unquote, you know, for lack of a better term, I suppose. Yeah. So how do we go about, I guess, rationalizing that? Because I think, and that is also reflected in sometimes our own behavior to our own homes, right? You know, like I told you earlier, you know, we demolish our rumah kampung just because we want to keep up with the times, right? I suppose. And I think it's, at that period, it's relevant, but the manner in which we did it, we kind of like, okay, like, you know, obviously we're not over romanticizing our old home as well, to be fair, but if we were a bit more thoughtful, because it's an old school rumah Melaka style, you know, with that stairs and everything. But yeah, we didn't care so much about that, I suppose, you know, and demolish it and build a, you know, modern quote-unquote bungalow.
I think that you know, you can't blame yourselves for having done that. You know, it's what our education or the way in which our society sees as important. And so what are the trends, for example? So the idea of rumah papan as old equals tak maju, right? If we've been through this before, old equals, you know, out of use, not to be. We want new, we want exciting, we want, you know, things that show that we are progressive. So we get rid of. And we replace, not get rid of, we replace, we keep our home, we keep the land, but we replace the old structure with something new. Okay? And sometimes it's because the old structure is, you know, takes too much to repair, or it's really difficult to find the tukang who can do it, or if you have a rumah papan, and you have to walk up the stairs. As you get older, it becomes a bit more difficult. Maybe, right? A rumah batu, which is on ground level, is always more accessible. You just enter direct. You don't have to, you know, worry about, you know, aging parents or grandparents, for example. You know, and then things like I think the danger is over romanticizing the traditional vernacular as well. And I'll tell you a story. Because I remember many, many years ago, my son had this notion of, you know, I want to live in a traditional shop house, you know, I want to, you know, because that is the way we have to live, you know. So, you know, what is this modern, you know, now, no doubt my house is, you know, 1960s house, but, you know, what is this modern house like in PJ that we live in? You know, why don't we have we live in a shop house? Because it's, and so I'm looking at it and saying, okay, right, fine. You want to live in a shop house? Go and live in a shop house. And tell me whether the experience of living in a shop house, in a traditional shop house, and not one that has been renovated, a traditional shop house is what you think that it is. So, for example, you know, walls, private spaces, okay? What you do in your room, timber wall, timber floor, somebody downstairs, if you're upstairs, might be able to hear you every time you move. Yeah. You shift your chair, you're walking. Okay, right, fine. So you have that. If you're sitting below the roof, maybe the dust from above the floorboards or whatever will fall down below onto you. So don't eat below that. Your types of windows, you want to air condition your room, might be a bit more difficult because your energy bill might be a bit higher because you have all these open ventilation. Okay. The bathroom that you would be using might be a toilet which is downstairs. So if you're upstairs, you might need to, you know, go downstairs and because that would be what the traditional is. You may not be able to, you may not have the kind of facilities that you are used to in a more modern facility. And it doesn't mean that any of it is bad, okay? It means, though, that it could be a different experience from what you think it might be because you like the idea of living in this and you over-romanticize this type of space. So after 3 months of living in a shop house, he did come back and admit that, you know, there are advantages and disadvantages. The advantage was you're right in town, you step out, you have neighbors, you know, you can sit in the 5 foot way, people sit in 5 foot way and they interact with their neighbors. There is a camaraderie around which you can feel about it, about being in a space like that. Okay. But it doesn't maybe have the kind of modern facilities that one tends to nowadays, especially, you know, want to expect a modern kitchen, modern loos, air conditioning, because the ambient temperature is, shall we say, you know, is higher than it used to be when the shop house was originally built. You have open air wells or closed air wells. If you have an open air well, it's great because the rain comes in and it cools the place. It's horrid because if you're sitting next to it, you might get wet and you have to move your furniture aside, you know, that kind of thing. So you close your air well, which then gives you more space, but actually, what do you call it, disrupts the original reason for having the air well, which has to do with ventilation, airflow, light, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So you have to look at and understand it in that context. And if you are looking at your old rumakapan that you were saying that your grandparents built, you know, you are looking at what kind of kitchen facilities did you have? What kind of toilet facilities did you have? And if you want to upgrade, how do you upgrade? And how do you make things more, you know, nowadays we talk about universal access, having ramps. I mean, you know, how do you do that? And so it is a question of adapting sometimes and taking the best of it. So what do we take? What is the principle behind it? Well, the reason for it to be raised has to do with ventilation, has to do with climate, has to do with, you know, heat rising. The reason for the deep eaves is to do with shading from sun. The orientation of the house has to do with sun as well. The way the orientation, it has to do with qiblat, right? These are all things we take into consideration when we're building. It has to do with how you face if previously your major thoroughfare was not a road, but a river. How do you face the river? How do you, you know? So all of these things we have to take into mind. And what is the principle behind it? The principles have access and accessibility. Okay? The principle of what materials are available to you. What is already there in the environment? Nowadays, if you had a timber house, it is probably an extremely expensive exercise because the cost of timber versus the cost of brick and mortar is not exactly equal, shall we put it that way, okay? Mm-hmm. If you are talking about hardwood and all of that. And there is this notion of dulu rumah papan orang kata kita tak maju, right? So we have a rumah batu so that we can be with the times and we can be considered maju, We can be considered progressive. We can be considered modern. And with it, right? Nowadays, we have a romantic house, or we go to Jandabai, or, you know, a resort that has the original, let's say, old structure, which is the shell of, let's say, a traditional timber house. But the inside of it has been, I'm not going to say modernized, but has been fitted out and reprogrammed the spaces to become maybe a huge bedroom space, you know, with some sitting area and all of that, which is then a reflection, I think, of, you know, maybe a sense of wanting back that memory, wanting to get back to that period of time and that legacy, but not, but it not really being so, but we still want our modern comforts, lah. We still want to be able to do it. And I think that we have to reflect on sort of the balance, right? Because we were talking about that. How do you balance between what is old and what is new? And how do we learn from what was old? There are a lot of good things, but we have to understand what were the principles behind it. In this day of climate change, in this day of sustainable SDGs, in this day of green, right? It's sort of things that we kind of, in this day of the slow movement, as opposed to the fast movement, you know, fast food, fast less fashion, fast everything, into recycling, into reprogramming, into reuse. Mm.
Again, just to play a bit of a devil's advocate, does that mean that to a certain extent, that's where quote-unquote rural heritage will lose out then? The fact that they were never that sustainable to begin with?
They're completely sustainable. Completely. They can be. Who's to say that you can't have a hybrid where you have your rumah papan and to have an extension to it, which is completely modern and up to date, and maybe your kitchen on the ground floor as opposed to on a planta at the back, you know? And I have a completely modern kitchen, completely with, who's to say that? And if you look at what a lot of people are doing now, it is that combination where you've taken the best of both worlds. You say, okay, right, you know, if I'm going to feed my kids and do this efficiently, I can't be using a wood fire, okay? That's just not on. It's also more, potentially more dangerous. You have to manage your risk, right? You know, you have piped water. I mean, you know, have well water. You have to treat the water. Right? You know, you have to put it through a filter. Let's not over-romanticize this. We have a lot of things in our modern lives which are really, really good and progressive and things that we should keep. It's a question of how do we, in a rural environment, how do we capture aspects of the architecture or the lifestyle and the form and the functionality, of the traditional vernacular architecture and bring that up to date. And marry the two. But I know for me, a lot of the problem lies in the fact that I think it's a condition of being human, want the big, the grand, the beautiful, and anything modest, we don't really see. We really want, you know, we embellish, we want to see things which are grand and great. I'm beautiful and majestically covered.
All right. So last question, like, I guess just to reflect or I guess challenge and accept that notion initially that was put to us earlier on the show about, I guess, over-romanticizing British colonial architecture, I suppose, and heritage buildings. What are some examples of non-colonial heritage buildings that we have covered before, that we have spoken about, that you can just list down to show that, you know, heritage doesn't just focus on old British colonial buildings?
Well, if we talk about institutional or monumental buildings, let's say, like I mentioned before, even like an example, like a hospital, even though it might have been built at a particular period, rarely was built using the character and the legacy of traditional architecture, you know, raised with the building, I mean, raised off the ground, and timber, using the use of timber, and wide corridors that were linking. So, you know, Tanglin Hospital, for example, would be an example, I would say, of something which, because it's modest, you don't think of it as colonial architecture. Because it's got all that element of timber in it, we don't think of it as colonial architecture. But really, if you are defining it as buildings built during the colonial period, then I would say it would squarely fall into that, right? But there are also the sort of, if we are using 1957 as our threshold, Stadium Merdeka is a completely modern building, built 1956, completed before Merdeka. So is it a British colonial building? Is it a modern Malaysian building? What is it? But it is certainly an aspirational building built modern, as a modern reflection of a modern, new modern country. Right? It was a reflection of, here we are. This is what we are. Modest. It isn't overly embellished. But the type of technology that was available at that time, concrete, et cetera, you know, a reinforced concrete that was available at that time, what was able to be built in a very short period of time, was technologically, engineering-wise, really very clever, because you have the stadium, the base of the stadium, which was a football pitch. And again, it was functional. Yeah, it was built as a football stadium because Tengku was very clear, right? So you build something, it's a monument, but it is also a functional space which can be used not only for this one function. Okay, one time. Merdeka, sekali je, yeah. Mm. So it is not repeated, shall we say. Although, of course, when Malaysia was declared, it was used again. But no doubt, you know, but it is called the Merdeka Stadium. It's not called the Malaysian Stadium, right? And why? It was built specifically for that. It wasn't a monument like a monolith or a structure, a sculpture or something like that to mark it. It was a functional space. And it was built it was built as an amphitheater, like an earth bowl. It was built on an earth bowl. It was built on a very solid base. They didn't have time to do lots of piling and to build a foundation and all of that. They used the topography of the land to create the stands and the spaces and to build on it. So 2/3 of it is built on hill. Or not 2/3. Yeah, maybe about 2/3. At least half of it is built on a slope. So the stands sit on a slope. So it's a very firm base, you know, it's a solid base. The land of the pitch is on a base. And it's only the south stand, the one that overlooks Jalan Maharaja Leela, Maharaja Leela, and the grandstand are mainly built above ground, you know, on what was more flat ground. And it used the topography, and it's a completely modern building, but if you go by 1957, which is what we talked about as a cutoff date, then it's colonial. You know, so it really depends on what we mean, right?
Mm.
You know, I think that if we start looking at this and we start looking at, for example, some buildings like the Art Deco period buildings that were built in the 1930s, let's say, by A.O. Coltman, if we look at the Rubber Research Institute. Main building on Jalan Ampang and the Oriental building on Jalan Melayu or Melaka, Jalan Melaka and Jalan Tun Perak. Would people associate them as colonial buildings? They would associate them as modern Art Deco structures. I don't think that, I may be wrong, but I don't think that people will think, oh, colonial building, you know what? I think people think colonial building when it comes to the railway station, the Sultan Mahmud building, the former post office, the old BPL building. You know what I mean? Those ones people think of as colonial buildings. But you point out the 1936 Oriental building. I doubt that will come to mind. I mean, I may be wrong. Would it come to, you know, I mean that it would be worthwhile just sort of checking and not checking. I mean, obviously, we're not into, shall we take a poll? But, you know, I mean, it's kind of worth thinking about, lah.
You've been tuning in to I Love KL, and that was our resident heritage conservation expert, Elizabeth Cardosa, sharing her thoughts on the question of whether heritage only romanticizes British colonial buildings and architecture over rural architecture. That's all we have for this episode of I Love KL. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl, our app, which you can find via Google Play and the App Store. You can also find this podcast and many others on Spotify and other streaming platforms. Don't forget to also follow the station on X at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Bahar, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Stay safe and join us again next week, only on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.